All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to everyone who listened last week. And if you're new, an extra special welcome. My name is Heather, and I'm the host for Crimecast. You're able to listen to me on Spotify and the Laurier Radio website Tuesdays at 5 p.m. But you already knew that because you're tuned in. I have created an Instagram account for the show called Crimecast 2020. If you just looked it up, it should be the first one. If you want to go and check that out, I will be posting updates and sneak peeks for what comes next. I even hope to gain some audience participation where we can decide who I talk about next, or if you have a specific killer, crime, or topic that you want covered, we can all kind of discuss that over there. Now that the formalities are done, we can get into today's topic of psychopaths. For today, I will be going into detail about the background knowledge of a psychopath, so today won't be very violent. I do, however, provide stories of psychopaths that involve murder, so if that's not your thing, feel free to click away. But if it's right up your alley, let's get started. The term psychopath has captivated people since the beginning of time. Psychopaths are defined as a persistent pattern of manipulation, the lack of empathy slash remorse, and impulsively acting without considering the consequences. This broad term is then applied and linked to the actions of serial killers of any kind. From this link, it is where people made the connection that a psycho is a killer. To fully understand a psychopath and its assessment, we're going to need to understand a few things first. Then, as I continue, I will further define what each means. Starting with the basics, the construct and assessment of psychology is dependent on the identification of the interpersonal, affective, and behavioral symptoms that are caused by psychopathy. These symptoms are noted within Factor 1, Factor 2, and other factors in the Hare Psychopathy Checklist Revised that is used all over the world to give a diagnosis. This assessment also takes into consideration the age, gender, and culture of that individual to produce a verdict. Psychopaths can be similar to the Hollywood portrayal of one, but that is often exemplified to show like the madness of the character to ensure a box office hit. Not all psychopaths are violent, and mundane psychopaths, if you want to call it that, channel their need to control others into gainful employment. The term psychopath is umbrellaed under the term antisocial personality disorder, as they are two different, yep, related things. Antisocial personality disorder, or ASPD, is a personality disorder characterized by a long-term pattern of disregard for or violation of the rights of others. Low moral sense or conscience is often apparent, as well as a history of crime, legal problems, or impulsive and aggressive behavior that is present since the age of 15. Because psychopathy can be similar yet different, it is hard to understand psychopathy without knowing ASPD first. Psychopathy is a subset disorder of ASPD because people with antisocial personality disorder may not be psychopaths, and vice versa. We see those differences between psychopathy and ASPD in the quote-unquote other factors mentioned previously. Psychopathy is the most dangerous of all disorders as they can emotionally disassociate themselves from their actions regardless of how terrible. They are the best actors as they charm others into believing that they can feel for their situations. They create a quote-unquote normal persona to hide their dark side and instill trust with their future victims. Research can suggest that while life events of a person can trigger the psychopathic behavior, this disorder is largely genetic. It can be found where the part of the brain controlling impulse is underdeveloped. Okay, So now that I have thrown a lot of terms at you, let's figure out what they mean. Psychopathy has a clinical description of a personality disorder characterized by an absence of emotional attachment to others and a lack of concern for their rights and welfare, as well as a sense of entitlement and impulsivity. This clinical definition is the basis for the first step in assessing psychopathy. First, let's define the interpersonal, affective, behavioral, and other symptoms that construct psychopathy, as those symptoms are then in turn used to diagnose psychopathy. Interpersonal symptoms are indicators of a person's characteristic style of interacting with other people. The traits characterized here are superficial charm, grandiose self-worth, pathological lying, and that they are cunning/manipulative. A great example of this would be Donald Trump. Just think about what I said for a minute and think about how his character relates to those interpersonal symptoms. They kind of align, right? Affective symptoms are indicators of a person's emotional responses and feelings. These symptoms are the lack of remorse, shallow affect, lack of empathy, and not accepting of responsibility. Behavioral symptoms are broken into two categories that are indicators of a person's observable and characteristic manner of behaving. First, there is lifestyle, where we look at their need for stimulation, parasitic lifestyle, meaning that they use others, the lack of goals, and impulsivity and irresponsibility. Next, there is the antisocial component. Here, we look for poor behavioral controls, early behavioral problems, juvenile delinquency, and criminal diversity. So what that means is like the range of crimes, i.e. from like robbery to murder to sexual assault. The more diverse a crime history, the more impulsive they seem to be. Finally, let's look at the other symptoms. The criteria for this is a promiscuous sexual behavior and many short-term relationships. Due to the manner of psychopathy, it is hard to correctly diagnose. That was until Robert Hare developed the Hare Psychopathy Checklist Revised. The Hare Psychopathy Checklist Revised is a clinical assessment tool that evaluates the relevant psychopathic symptoms. What this does is group the interpersonal, affective, and behavioral symptoms into 20 categories that are then scored from 0 to 2. A score of 0 means that there is no match. A partial match is indicated with a score of 1, and a score of 2 means a strong match. These symptoms are broken up into factor 1, factor 2, and other symptoms within factor 1, being interpersonal and affective symptoms. With the total score out of 40, a score of 30 would be the cutoff point for any psychopath. This assessment tool has been used and adapted for multiple different populations and cultures. What has produced is an asymmetrical relationship between antisocial personality disorder and psychopathy. The data have shown that people with ASPD, antisocial personality disorder, are not psychopaths, but all psychopaths have ASPD. To further complicate this already complicated topic, the assessment of psychopathy is also affected by several factors, including age, culture, and gender. As the offender ages, there seems to be a change in the age-related lifestyle, but not a change in their personality. What this means is that there is a chance for correction if intervened properly, but that does not get rid of the core symptoms still intact. Culture and psychopaths is hard to address as there are different rules within different cultures and thus crime is measured differently. What researchers found was that the same cognitive and psychophysiological errors can be found across all cultures. Gender is an interesting topic as psychopathy is not only in men. Women also do exhibit these symptoms, but not in the same way as men. This is due to the differences in socialization experiences that are formed in childhood and adolescence. Men will often resort to violence, where females tend to lean towards more hurtful gossip or verbal manipulation. This is inherently more difficult as women will go unnoticed and may end up doing more hurtful psychological harm and for longer than men. This assessment of a psychopath is crucial to the structure of society and the way help is given. An offender that is diagnosed psychopath is then treated the correct way, as a release without correction may prove to be more fatal than their first offenses. All right, so let's put your new definitions to the test. Let's look at a story that involves a female psychopath. Keep in mind some of the information I have already told you so that you can go look out for the red flags, so to speak. In March 2013, Joanna Denny stabbed 3 men to death and critically injured 2 more over a 2-week period. She lured her first victim, Lucas Skablinski, to a house by stabbing him, by sending him sexually aggressive texts and stabbing him in the heart when he arrived. A week and a half later, she murdered her roommate, John Chapman, by stabbing him multiple times, including twice in the heart. She murdered her landlord, Kevin Lee, later that same day. In a final act of humiliation, she put his body in a black dress and dumped him in a ditch, purposely exposing his buttocks. After the killings, Denny reportedly phoned a friend and sang the Britney Spears song, Oops, I Did It Again. A few days later, Denny persuaded a male companion to travel with her to Hereford in search of more victims. There, in separate incidents occurring minutes apart, she spotted and attacked 2 men who were out walking. As she stabbed the second victim, John Rogers, she said, "Oh, look, you're bleeding. I'd better do some more." Despite the gravity of her injuries, both victims managed to survive. When Denny and her accomplice were picked up by the police a short time later, she jokingly told them that it's been a hectic week. One of the most striking things about Denny is that she enjoyed a relatively stable upbringing and was a well-adjusted, bright, and active child. Family members report that this all changed in her mid-teens when she began hanging out with older boys and skipping class. At 15, she ran away with 20-year-old John Tenor and began drinking and using drugs. Her relationship with Tenor was a volatile one, plagued by constant arguments and violence, especially when she was drunk. The pair had 2 children, but Denny, who complained she had not wanted kids, frequently walked out of the family for long stretches of time. Her violent outbursts eventually became too much for Tenor, who left with the children. Denny's behavior continued to deteriorate, and in the years leading up to the murders, she drifted from one place to another, often resorting to theft and prostitution to support herself. Criminologist Samantha Ludgren noticed that Denny is a quote-unquote classic psychopath. The judge who sentenced her to life in prison described her as cruel, calculating, selfish, and manipulative. The court also disclosed that she told a psychiatrist, "I killed to see how it would feel, to see if I was cold as I thought I was." It seems that Denny reveled in the notoriety associated with the killings. She reportedly showed the corpse of one victim to a teenage girl and elaborated when the first accounts of the murders were broadcasted by the media. Dr. Lundgren speculated that if she is a psychopath, she will like to have attention on her. Once the limelight is gone, she may be she may feel compelled to offer some kind of explanation in order to keep the focus on her. Were you able to see the behavioral patterns in Joanna Denny? Her case can highlight the key traits of a psychopath. There are 10 key traits when analyzing a psychopath's character. First, there is a lack of empathy. They can feel what you feel, but they cannot understand. 2, they are manipulative. They use deception to get people to do what they want. They're only really concerned with personal gain. 3, they have a lot of irresponsibility, as impulsivity is a huge indicator. 4, there's narcissism. They view themselves as smarter and better than everyone, and that the world revolves around them. 5, they are a pathological liar. Their lies are like webs. 6, they have superficial charm, which is an absence of embarrassment, which is enticing to some people. 7, there is the lack of remorse. They just simply do not feel guilty. 8, there is a proneness to boredom. They need adrenaline constantly. 9, they're bullies. They are abusive to those who are not of a benefit to them. These people would include the old or the young and animals. A key warning sign is a child who kills or harms smaller animals. This is because they do this at a time when they are just experimenting. And finally, 10, there is a need for control/power. Given that psychopaths are arrogant, they often portray their mistakes or misfortunes onto others, as to gain people's sympathy and attention by playing the victim. A classic example of profound interpersonal skills exhibited by a psychopath is Ted Bundy. Ted would be able to charm his victims into helping him with a task so that he could take them to be murdered elsewhere. The importance of being able to identify these interpersonal symptoms is to see how thoughtful they are, as this hints to a complex offender. Impulsivity is one of the biggest symptoms in regard to a psychopath's behavior. As they do not hold on to anything, psychopaths are seen frequently making changes to their life in the forms of relationships, occupation, living situations, and hobbies. This is dangerous for the public, as no one is truly safe anywhere, and it also makes it harder for the police to link crimes to the person. By staying in one place, it makes the psychopath bored, as they have nothing to do but fantasize and seek out thrilling experiences. Another telltale sign of psychopath is through antisocial behavior. This behavior is a consequence of the personality disorders like selfishness, deceit, lack of empathy, and impulsivity. Studying the behavioral symptoms of psychopaths is important to understand how they are able to lead very different lives. Their lifestyles make them harder to track and always on the hunt for the next victim. Now going back to Joanna Denny's case, her character can clearly align with what we would identify as a psychopath. But continuing on, what makes a psychopath so dangerous? A noticeable factor is their inability to form relationships with others. As psychopaths do not have a full range of emotion, this can distort their reality and morality. By not being able to make connections with others, they become numb to anyone's world but their own. This makes psychos dangerous, as their victims do not matter to them, and they will carry out the assault as if the victims are inanimate objects. In addition to not being able to make connections with others, psychopaths do not feel empathy or remorse for what they have done. This will hinder their ability to stop the act and will allow them to kill again. This is truly the area that non-psychopaths are intrigued with, as a normal functioning person will be able to feel for others. This would normally deter them away from most crimes. The role of relationships and remorse are very important to the construction of a psychopath, as without them, they are more adept to kill due to their numbed morality. But what drives a psychopath to kill? Many do not end up in the justice system without events that cause their psychopathic symptoms to turn fatal. Throughout their early life, the offenders have undergone traumatic experiences such as abuse or bullying. In most cases, a killer may be diagnosed as psychotic or having psychopathic/sadistic behavior, depending on the crime committed. A psychotic killer kills because his psychosis drives him to. These sadistic, brutal murderers are committed by people who cannot control their sexual impulses due to the lack of empathy and impulsive tendencies that a psychopath possesses. In the research done by Milloy in 2000, they found that sexual homicide offenders exhibit abnormal personality structures like that of a psychopath. It was due to the formative traumatic events that a child's likely to experience that could predispose him or her to act on the environment as an adult. The driving factor for murderers like Joanna Demme, Ted Bundy, and many others is that they are trapped by primary instincts or that funny feeling that was formed through the traumatic life experiences and opportunities. So, now that you know the traits of a psychopath, is there anyone in your life that seems very similar to this? Because odds are, there is. Statistics show that every 1 in 100 person is likely to have psychopathic tendencies. This statistic only goes up as to 1 in 25 people when we look at people in leadership roles. These leadership roles would include CEOs, lawyers, surgeons, police, chef, and salespeople. Here, let's take a look at blue-collar psychopath, given the name Dave. Dave was in his mid-30s when he interviewed for a job at a rapidly growing electronics firm in the United States. He immediately impressed company officials. He was good-looking, articulate, and his resume was exponential for someone his age. After a routine reference check, he was hired. In the beginning, Dave came across favorably to his colleagues. He frequently arrived to the office early in the morning and appeared to stay late into the evening. He seemed creative, intelligent, and ambitious. He was also skillful at interrogating himself into others and soon had a small circle of allies in various parts of the company, whom he could count on for support and assistance. Those who worked closely with Dave were not impressed for long. He proved to be unreliable, and his work often failed to meet expectations. On one occasion, he submitted a major report containing plagiarized texts and falsified business figures. He frequently turned up to meetings late and tended to disrupt the discussion. Team members noted that he was demurring, aggressive, and rude. Other coworkers thought he was conceited because of his constant boasting, but he seemed indifferent to their opinion. He also attempted to bring company equipment home without permission, purchase supplies without authorization, and padded his resume. When Dave was confronted about his behavior, he either dismissed the concerns as unimportant or became irate with those who spoke to him. He quickly developed a reputation as a phony who used lies to gain colleagues' trust and then would take advantage of them. Those who worked less frequently for Dave saw him in a much more positive light. A number of senior executives identified him as someone with management potential, although none of them could provide specific examples of his accomplishments. When the employees reported that Dave was misappropriating company time and materials to further a private business venture, management told them to leave him alone, making it plain to all that they continued to hold him in high regard. It became apparent that Dave has established relationships with some of the executives to secure his reputation to badmouth his immediate supervisor, whose job Dave wanted. So, here Dave didn't have to kill anyone to be deemed a psychopath. It was clear to those who saw Dave less often that he wasn't very normal. Yes, killers are psychopaths, but not all psychopaths are killers. And there's a huge population that are just like Dave. Roughly 1% of the general population is a psychopath. Yet, that number is still quite large, so there is a very good chance someone you know is a psychopath. The assessment of a psychopath is crucial to the structure of society and the way help is given. An offender that is a diagnosed psychopath is then treated the correct way, as a release without correction may prove to be more fatal than their first offenses. Right now, there is no cure to psychopathy. As it is different to various degrees in everyone, no size-fits-all solution is found. Instead, the criminal justice system is concerned with identifying offenders who are at risk of recidivating if they are released back into the general public. Hart, Kopp, and Hare, in 1988, conducted an investigation of criminal recidivism in a sample of 200 Canadian male federal offenders. Using their psychopathy scores from the Hare checklist revised, the men are broken into categories and monitored during their parole. They were considered a failure if the offender had incurred a new conviction or his release was revoked. The records show that the higher the psychopathy score, the more likely they are to fail. The results show that psychopaths failed much more quickly than that of the other offenders. The researchers estimated that 80% of non-psychopaths remained free after a year, whereas only 38% of psychopaths remained free. So, the only hope for psychopaths is to receive help when they are younger, so some behaviors can be corrected. I just want to say thank you so, so much for joining us today. I hope you all learned a lot about psychopaths. I hope you found it very interesting. Please, please, please go make sure you check out Crimecast 2020 on Instagram. And I hope to see you all next week. Next week, I believe we will be talking about human trafficking.